The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Welcome to Hour 2 of The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. I want to continue giving you guys information about what the skill set of the future is going to require, because there seems to be, I don't know, is it a myth or just a faulty understanding that everybody is owed a job or employment? And when we see somebody that's unemployed and they tell us their hard luck story of how they can't find work, of course, we immediately feel sorry for them. But then there's also an expectation that, oh, somebody needs to create a job. A create a job doing what? Just like what do you expect a job to offer you? If you don't have the skill set, then you can't work at that place. It's super simple. It's an agreement. It's a contract. It's an understanding. You have these skills. You have this education. You have this experience. And you put it all down on a piece of paper, a resume. If people even accept resumes anymore, I don't even know if they do. And then your employer is like, okay, cool. You have the education and the skill set that we are looking for. We're going to buy it from you for $37 an hour or $52,000 a year plus benefits and 401k and dental and health insurance. You're selling your skill set. Now, I know this may be very hard for some people to believe, especially the people that don't have a skill set. Can't hire you if you can't do anything. If you don't have basic customer service skills, if you can't use, I don't know, Microsoft Office, if you don't have reasonable telephone etiquette, if you don't have problem-solving skills, what are we going to hire you to do? And if we do hire you at this hypothetical company that just came here and planted itself down in Milwaukee just to give you a job because you want one, you're not going to last long. There's a skill set that I know that's missing. People don't know how to work with other people. That's, I don't know how you teach that. I thought that was just real basic decency and respect. You might know how to do the job, but if you work with a bunch of people that have poor social skills, like, you ain't got to like the people that you work with, but you got to be able to coexist with them for the purposes of doing the job you were hired to do, because you have a skill set that your employer purchased from you. And maybe that's the way which we need to look at it. I can't just hire anybody. Nobody can just hire anybody, because that's going to be an unmitigated disaster. Talk to somebody that's looking for work, that's looking for workers. Let them tell you the horror stories about the interviews, the lack of professionalism. 3 out of 5 people are going to smell like marijuana when they come to the job interview. If you have to get high to go into a job interview, who's going to hire that person? And that's why I think the legalization of marijuana is going to be deceptive, because you'll still get drug tested. A company can drug test you. Even though marijuana is legal, there might be a dispensary next door to wherever it is you're working. If that job doesn't want the liability of someone high as an employee, because remember, if you get hurt at work, that's a whole process of legal stuff that goes on, right? And even though you may feel normal or feel better, or maybe you're more productive if you're high, and I'm just using marijuana as an example because it seems to be ubiquitous nowadays. An employer can say, no, I need you at your best and your most focused and your sharpest. And then I know what some of you are saying, but I am my best and my most focused and my sharpest when I'm high. Then you have a drug problem. It's deceptive, because we also live in a society that loves alcohol very much a lot. I mean, hell, I got a Tito's vodka baseball jersey that Tito's sent me. I wore it a couple times on air, but I was like, this is probably a bad idea, because it's not like Tito's is paying me. We have a baseball team that's named after how you make beer. I don't know if they still have it, but Budweiser used to sponsor vehicles in NASCAR. And you're probably thinking, oh, what's the big deal with that? Just for a second, think creatively. How is that not promoting drinking and driving? You have a NASCAR going 200 miles an hour with Budweiser stickers and paintings and drawings all over the damn car. That's, and people always talk about how much fun they have when they go, oh, we got so drunk last night, we don't even remember what happened. We had so much fun. Think about that for a second, too. How is that fun if you don't know what happened? I'd be very nervous if I went out drinking and couldn't recall what took place. I would wonder if a certain part of my body is still a virgin, because, hey, if you can't remember, you don't know what happened, right? But it also makes it incredibly easy in this society, especially in Milwaukee, to be an alcoholic. And there's some alcoholics that are very high functioning. If you go and drink, I'm not kidding you, if you drink every single day, and no shade to people that do, some of you do, it is what it is, none of my business. If you go to happy hour every single day, no one would even think that that's weird or excessive here. Or the weather's getting warmer. It's supposed to be 80-some degrees this weekend, right? Today, tomorrow, it's going to be warm, real warm. First of all, somebody's going to get shot. I'm just telling you. That's going to happen. But then people like to sit outside and drink. That's a whole nother element here. Boats are going to be on the water. I don't even know what the laws are when it comes to drinking and boating, because, you know, I have friends that have boats. Get you a friend that has a boat. Seriously, highly recommended. And there's a whole bunch of different bars and restaurants that actually have boat slips where you can get on your boat, ride up and down the river, and then dock your boat at a restaurant. You walk up the little stairs there and you go to the restaurant. All the people that I see that are boating on the Milwaukee River or whatever, the Menominee River, the KK River, and they get off their boats and go into these bars, they're already drunk already. Can you drunk boat? Is that a legal thing here? I'm not sure, because I've never seen a sober boater. I think you can drunk boat here. Very common. And the problem of excessive drinking is masked by the culture of alcohol. I mean, we're a city that used to make pretty much all the beer in the world. A lot of folks don't know this, but Wisconsin was the last state. We had to have been the last one. We held out. The drinking age, it used to be 18 years old. That's a bad idea. I don't know if it's, because you would imagine a bunch of high school seniors. Well, some of y'all are old enough to remember. Is there anybody in the chat that is old enough to remember when the drinking age in Milwaukee or Wisconsin was 18? Then they moved it to 19. And then there was this weird period where you were grandfathered in. So if you were born like before a certain date, because they changed it to 21 universally everywhere in the country to buy alcohol and to consume alcohol and to go into bars, blah, 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 blah. But if your birthday fell in a weird range, they grandfathered you in so you could be 19 and still drink. And so Wisconsin maintained our low drinking age until the very, very last minute, until the federal government came in and said, if you don't raise your drinking age in Wisconsin, we're going to suspend all of your federal highway dollars. You won't be able to build or fix or repair any of your roads and bridges unless you raise your drinking age. And Wisconsin still pushed back. We were like, but we don't want to, because here's what was happening. Kids from Illinois that were 19 years old would drive across the state line to Wisconsin because our drinking age was still 19. Drinking age in Illinois was 21. And a lot of those kids never made it back. They would die on the highway because they would get absolutely plastered and get on the highway and drive back to Illinois, or at least so they thought. That is the culture of this place. Another one of the reasons why marijuana has remained absolutely prohibited and illegal, and it still is illegal in the state of Wisconsin. I know that's kind of hard to conceptualize because we do have certain types of dispensaries because of the farm bill. The Tavern League. You smoke a couple of joints, you're not drinking nearly as many Manhattans. You're just not. Marijuana is competition to alcohol, and the alcohol industry is a very, very, very strong lobby because of how important the drinking culture is to Wisconsin. I got a couple of text messages here at 833-212-1017. Where do I begin? Eugene says, "Hello, I saw your show and wanted to share this. Boosie will be here next Friday, and his team gave me some flyers and posters to pass out to promote it. Can I bring some to the station to drop off and for y'all to promote? He wants to get the word out to purchase tickets. Please don't purchase them online because it's $40 cheaper to purchase them in person." So, no. And why I'm assuming Boosie, where is he going to be even? It doesn't matter. He probably wants people to purchase them in person because then he'll get the money. If you buy them online, then ticket resellers will get a higher portion of the ticket price. But I say this to folks all the time. "Hey, Sherwin, I got something going on here. Can you promote my this?" Or somebody's coming into town and they want people to buy tickets. You got to run ads like everybody else. I don't care if Bootsy coming to town. You selling tickets, we selling something too. Ad space. So, no, I'm not. I don't know, maybe Tory will. I'm not going. How would that even sound? "Hey, everybody, buy little Boosie tickets." I don't know how many of the people in this listening audience even listen to Lil Boosie. Stacy wants to know, "Do you come up with your own topics for your show, or are they given to you?" That varies by show. I don't know how other shows do it, actually. I'm not sure how they. There's some where they meet, like the host and the producer will meet and discuss stuff. I know that's how they do it at 620 TMJ. They have like these meetings, pre-show meetings, and is it a production meeting? I don't know what it's called, where they decide on topics and the producer provides a list of topics. They tried to do that with me. That's not my preferred way to deliver information. Now, I'm going to say something that's very unique to me, and I don't want to offend any other radio hosts who may happen to listen to my show. And I can tell the difference in a radio program where the topics are selected with consensus. So let's say you have a host and a co-host, and you have a producer, and they each may bring some ideas to the table. Not every idea can get realized because you only have a 2-hour show or a 3-hour show. So everyone won't be able to discuss the topic that they brought to the table. So you have to come up with some kind of consensus of what topics you're going to discuss. And maybe they take notes and they do bullet points. I don't know. I'm not sure how they do it. But I think when this is my personal opinion, I got to say that because folks get offended real easy nowadays. When you have to do a radio show by committee, you kill creativity. I could sit down with a producer and they say, "Hey, Sherwin, here, I have a whole list of topics that you should discuss." And then I'll bring my own topics and then we decide what the show was going to consist of. You can't make this predictable. Because we get one phone call from Bob or Al or Lisa or Linda, and all that stuff gets thrown out the window. I think it's my personal opinion. The radio programs go better when it's just live and it's organic. You can't script this. And sometimes I'm going to let you in on a little secret. I feel like just blowing the lid off of stuff, just revealing the curtain. Because you can tell. There's some people that I interview, and I don't interview. I used to interview people all the time. Now I don't really want to talk to anybody because, come on. What do you really have to offer? When you get certain folks on, the interviews are scripted. I hate them. I hate scripted interviews. I hate them. Because I'm not engaged in you. I'm reading. It's like if somebody's giving a speech. Speaking of which, I went to the swearing in of Milwaukee Fire Chief Aaron Lipsky yesterday at Ladder Station Number 2 on 7th and Wells. Such a wonderful public servant. That guy is fantastic. You know, the Lipsky family has had someone serving on the Milwaukee Fire Department continuously since 1912. Like, that's awesome. But he's giving his speech thanking everybody and, you know, telling everybody how wonderful it is to be in Milwaukee and to serve the people of Milwaukee. He didn't have a – he went, "Hi, I'm Chief Aaron Lipsky, and I would like to I would like to thank everybody for coming here today." No, you got to have it organic. I've received scripts before where people have given me every single word to say in 30 minutes. Like, why would you put together that much work? You know how much typing that is? To type out a dialogue between two people where you're scripting out every single word. But that's how some people get down. It feels to me, it just sounds like it's insincere and inauthentic, especially when they try to write like humor into the segments. It's so bad. All right. Probably didn't need to share any of that. Take a break, come back. You know, there was an Obama story I wanted to share earlier in the week, but it got passed up. Come back, talk about that. Have I given you guys all the skill sets you're going to need for jobs that you're probably never going to get in the future? I guess we'll do some of that too. Hell, we'll do it all today. We'll do everything. It's my last day here as a Good Karma Brands employee, but I'll be back on Tuesday, May 26th, literally in the same place, but just working for a different company. In the meantime, next week during the week, I will broadcast from my YouTube channel where I'll keep everybody abreast and up to date of what's the new Black Media Trust radio program and social media broadcast is going to look like. So I'll keep you guys posted over at Hughes Views 414. That is my YouTube channel. In the meantime, I'm going to take me a little breaky break. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. We'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
The most valuable skill sets for the 2030 economy. Number one is AI literacy and human AI collaboration. I know that probably irks some of you, because here's the thing. If you just resist new technology, then maybe it won't happen. If you just try to slow the clock down, maybe seconds will get a little bit longer. Maybe days and weeks will get a little bit longer, and the inevitable may never show up. If you just resist these changes and these updates and where the world is moving to, maybe, just maybe, you can be stuck in the past. You know that's not the case. And we don't know what the future is going to bring, but the only thing that you can do to have the best shot of success, especially if you still plan on working into the next decade, the next 10 or 15 years, is you just got to be prepared as best you can. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen with these elections. We don't know what's going to happen in 2028. We don't know where the economy is going to be. Earlier in the week, I asked you all if you believe we were in a recession or heading toward one. Overwhelmingly, the answer was yes. And if you know that the recession is coming, or if you believe it's here, you might have to adjust some of your spending. You might have to look for a second job if you're at risk of being laid off or your hours getting cut, because that is typically what happens in an economic recession. You got to prepare for it. You don't know how long it's going to last. You don't know how bad it's going to be. You don't know what inflation is going to do. You don't know what interest rates are going to do, but you can try to prepare. Same thing when it comes to the jobs for the future, because I really don't want us to be dealing with these exact same social problems next decade and the decades after that. Our opportunity to fix the future is actually right now. I think that's the tough part, especially when it comes to legislation, because we'll identify a problem immediately and want to fix in 24 hours. Because with a short attention span society that is dominated by being able to be an in-the-moment consumer. Like, if I decide I want a new pair of shoes, I can go on Amazon, and the shoes might get home, get to my house before I get there after I'm done with my radio show. But when it comes to social change and when it comes to improving people's lives and creating long-lasting and durable policy, you can't expect the fix to be overnight. An example could be the Voting Rights Act, when passed, obviously it was to protect American citizens when they go and register and vote, no matter where in the country you were. But it also was to increase the number of registered voters, because it was so difficult or impossible for so long for black people in particular to be able to register and vote. I believe Mississippi had a 1% black voter turnout rate just because it was so difficult, if not impossible, for African Americans in the state of Mississippi to vote. That's why the Freedom Rides had to make sure they stopped in Mississippi, because there were very, very low numbers of African Americans that were registered to vote during the Jim Crow era. But the Voting Rights Act was not just about that moment and protecting people and enshrining their right to vote in law. It's about having people in the future see voting as a necessary part of being an American. And because African Americans were kept out, this is just one example, I could give a million others, of the process of selecting our own legislators, executives, and leaders, our lives were not adequately and accurately reflected in policy, because those that got elected were elected by someone else and not us. But if you have this protection, an impenetrable type of protection when it comes to someone's vote and registering to vote, and then the parents are doing it, and now the kids are seeing their parents vote, and the next generation is voting, then you get to a point like we did in 2012, which shocked all of us, and it was a major, major shift and almost a reexamination of voting rights in this country, because for the first time ever, and I'm going to attribute this to the Voting Rights Act that was signed and passed. There was several tenets, even in the Civil Rights Act of 1964, but the Voting Rights Act of 1965 that allowed for something to happen in 2012 that nobody ever predicted. You had a point in this country where black people simply couldn't vote, but then in 2012, African-American voter turnout was 66%. White turnout was 64%. Because of the Voting Rights Act of the past, more African-Americans voted in the future. So things that we do right now, policy examinations that we create and we come up with right now, will help people in the future. Very, very difficult to be that selfless, to try and support a piece of legislation that you're not ever going to benefit from, but someone in the future will. And that's a tough sell, because you almost have to ignore what you lack right now, but want to make sure that someone in the future that you don't know, that you'll never meet, doesn't deal with what you're dealing with right now. And so we're being forged in fire, because I can name, oh, I don't know, several thousand things that I don't want to see repeated in the future. It could be our economic climate. It could be our social climate. It could be whatever the hell politics are these days. And there are things that we should be suggesting and strategizing. And when we go and select our political candidates, and the good news is you're going to have a whole bunch of different flavors of candidate to choose from, especially if you are voting in the gubernatorial election, they have to be future focused. There's some things in the immediate need, I suppose. But a lot of times legislation does not take root and make monumental change for a whole generation. So you guys remember when the Republicans used to have these big erections for Ronald Reagan? Like about 10 or 15 years ago, all these Republicans, well, I looked up to Ronald Reagan and I want to be more like Ronald Reagan. Terrible example, by the way, but like he was really like a popular Republican to look up to. In fact, Ronald Reagan, to somebody like, let's say, Scott Walker, whose political season has sunrose and sunset, I bet Scott Walker is delivering DoorDash now. What is he doing? What is that guy even doing with his life? But yeah, he's out of the game, and probably for good reason. He even gave a speech where he talked about this picture he had in his office of Ronald Reagan, because Ronald Reagan's policies weren't realized until about 30 or so years later. And that's how it is with most presidents. The things that they sign an executive order. Trump is a little bit different. Trump gets stuff immediately, but most policies take a lot of time to absorb, and then states have to absorb them, and local governments absorb these presidential policies, and it takes about a generation. And some of Ronald Reagan's policies that a lot of Republicans probably 10, 15 or so years ago, that what they loved about his era is how it marginalized black people. So when they say they loved Ronald Reagan because he was there when we had the largest prison expansion, when we had some of the upticks in incarcerations for violent crime, when we had, and this was several different incarnations of this, crack cocaine epidemic and how we criminalized crack cocaine. Ronald Reagan essentially set us on that path, and the Republicans just loved it. Because think about this, though, too. In a very competitive American society, if there are groups of people that are not going to vote for you, your party, and your interests, you don't want them anywhere near a ballot box. And because of the Voting Rights Act, some of those people have the right to be at the ballot box. But if you underinvest in their communities, a lot of them are going to get caught up in the system, and they're going to go to jail. And we know if you get a felony, guess what? You can't vote. I think deep down we believe that those elected leaders are supposed to be just wonderful people and they're supposed to help everybody. They do not. Democrats probably do more of that than Republicans do. Republicans want to redistrict Democrats out of existence because they don't want to take anything from a Democratic agenda and incorporate it into what they do. Now, there was a period of time where it seemed there were better public servants, regardless of political party. But the Republicans make it abundantly clear. Oh, wait, black people are getting jobs and getting hired and making money and lifting themselves up by their bootstraps. Why is that happening all of a sudden? Oh, because of DEI. Well, then kill DEI then. What do you mean African-Americans were left out of, let's say, government employment and private sector employment for many, many generations in this country? Well, how are they getting jobs now? How are they excelling? How are they so competitive? How are they taking jobs from white people? Affirmative action? Oh, make that unconstitutional then. How are these black people getting so smart? These are real questions I'm sure that somebody was asking in some boardroom. How are these black people getting into college? How are they learning so much? What do you mean we can't stop them from getting into these colleges? Well, can we tell the colleges that they won't get any more federal funding if they use race, if they want to diversify their campus, but they use race to select who is going to be in their freshman class? Can we tell them they get no more federal funding? How about this? Okay, fine. We got to stop these blacks from going to college because if they get an education, not only will they be competitive, they might outcompete some white people. Let's make college really expensive, like debt forever. Let's make it impossibly expensive. So fine, if you want to take the risk on getting a college degree, the other thing they're not telling you, because Republicans have gone on this kick in the last couple few years, you don't need to go to college. College is a waste of money. Our senator here, Ron Johnson, I still don't know how dude got elected. We may question how Trump got elected. Ron Johnson getting elected and reelected as a senator in Wisconsin is even more astonishing than Donald Trump getting elected. Because I can see a collection of dumb people in other states that would give Donald Trump enough electoral college votes. I just didn't think that Wisconsin would be one of those states, but clearly we are. Ron Johnson was someone that said publicly and on the record, people don't know don't need to go to college anymore. They can just learn off of YouTube. Now, if you want to learn how to unclog your sink, yes, absolutely. But he said that YouTube is a replacement for an actual curriculum. The more educated you are, the more likely you are to be a Democrat. You know who carries the most student debt? I'm sure you've heard me say it before, but I need to reiterate it so people who may be hearing this for the first time. African-American women, but they're also outpacing almost white men when it comes to college enrollment and graduation rates. Men are just like sinking in a whole bunch of different categories, but African-American women are some of the most educated people in this country. Therefore, it makes sense that they have the highest student debt burden. And student debt you can't get rid of with a bankruptcy. So you can file bankruptcy 6 ways from Sunday and your student debt is not going to go away. In fact, it's going to continue to accrue interest in such a sinister way. And this is why the whole student debt forgiveness thing was a real and necessary policy. You can borrow a certain amount of money to go to college. And every year probably got more and more expensive, and whatever your total tuition was, you can have forbearances and deferments, and you can take a pause on your student loans because they're very forgiving and very flexible if you can't make a student loan payment, but the interest never stops. You know how many people there are that owe more money in their student loans than they borrowed in the first place, and it's debt they can't get rid of. And that burden fell on the backs and the shoulders of black women disproportionately. And Joe Biden said, we need to do college debt forgiveness. And Donald Trump stopped it. And a bunch of red Republican states sued to stop student debt forgiveness. Why? Because they didn't want to give black women any relief from that student debt. At the same time, we have a country that is contingent upon the most educated people. How far do you think we're going to go competing against China and India and so many other countries where they prioritize educating their populations? And you got folks over here thinking they can learn a whole curriculum on the YouTubes. Take a little pause, come back, probably rant and rave about a whole bunch of other things because, I mean, why the hell not? The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. We'll be right back.
You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Phone number is 833-212-1017, 833-212-1017. So Andy just called back. He's talking about a show that's not this one. So I'm trying to figure out what the hell he's even listening to. He said he's listening to the radio, but whatever he's listening to on the radio is not what's happening right now. Is that a him problem? Because what I'm saying right now is being broadcast on the FM signal. We're not replaying a show on the radio that's not this live broadcast, is it?
No, I think he's just having insane. Some problems.
He's okay. He's nuts. All right, that clears it up for me. The stranger things have happened.
What is this here?
The most valuable skill sets for the 2030 economy, AI literacy and human AI collaboration. This is becoming the new baseline skill set. Similar to what computer literacy was in the 1990s, workers should know how to use AI tools productively, write effective prompts, verify AI outputs, detect errors, hallucinations, and bias. Automate repetitive workflows. Combine multiple AI systems together. That doesn't sound like any skill set that anybody right now wants to learn. In fact, if you just resist it, if you just like close your eyes and put your fingers in your ears and just, I don't hear what's going on. I don't hear what's going on. I don't want to know. I don't want to know. I don't want to know. I think you'll be just fine. Because I think that's probably worked out in the past when people have denied the future. The key distinction, the future belongs to less people replaced by AI and more people who can supervise, direct, and improve AI systems. I'm curious. Maybe some of you know, maybe you don't. If you're a senior in high school right now, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing because I don't know what their future is going to look like. Is there some mention or focus or required class or elective classes where seniors in high school right now on the verge of graduation. Hell, they'll be graduating next month. Are they taking any classes or getting any instruction on artificial intelligence? We had computer classes when I was in high school, but I started high school in the 80s. I had a typing class. I think Brown Deer had just switched over to electronic typewriters because before me, it was old school typewriters with the ding, and you got to hit the lever and bring the carrier back over to the other side. I bet there's a whole generation of people right now alive that have never typed on a typewriter. There's something very satisfying about hitting an old school mechanical key on a typewriter. Do I want to bring those days back? I absolutely do not, but I remember those days fondly. Analytical and critical thinking. There's such a lack of this nowadays. I see it everywhere. This is a part of the skill sets that people are going to need in the future. As AI generates more information, human value shifts toward interpreting information. That's reading comprehension, which we know is low. Making decisions under uncertainty. Identifying flawed assumptions. Recognizing manipulation or misinformation. That ain't no way. I still see people posting on Facebook, I do not give Facebook permission to use my photos. These are my photos. Do you know that that myth has been debunked for 10 years? I don't give permission to Facebook. When you put in a username or an email address and a password, you surrendered everything. You were using their platform, and it's free. And then telling them, Facebook, that they can't use what you are giving to them in order to keep Facebook free. Your information, your comments, your likes, your shares, everything you post, all of that is monetized by Facebook. Now, we're not paying anything for that service, but you can't then say, hey, Facebook, don't use my photos. Hell yeah, they're going to use your photos. In fact, they're making facial recognition better and smarter. Okay, so some of you have been on Facebook since, well, you were in college, because it started off as a college thing only. Then I think in 06 or 07, because you had to have a .edu email address to even sign up for Facebook. And I think they took that away probably 18 or so years ago. And then regular, normal, not in college people could sign up for Facebook. The pictures that you may have posted, if you got one of those Facebook accounts, either when you were in college and you were 18, 19, 20 years old, and some of you might be in your 30s, in your 40s, in your 50s, you've aged, okay? Think about this. The pictures that you first posted on Facebook in 2000, let's say, 5, well, you don't look the same in 2026 because that was 21 years ago, right? As you post pictures every week or every 2 weeks, every month. Some people only post pictures a couple times a year. But the aggregate of your photos shows you aging. That is being fed into an algorithm so we can accurately determine how human beings age. So you ever see those renderings? I know we were talking about Alexis Patterson who disappeared in, oh my, when did she disappear? 2002, maybe? And they showed a picture of what she would look like now. And I suppose it's a pretty accurate representation of what, I think she was 9 or 10 when she disappeared. And they show what she would look like as a woman in her late 20s. Algorithms are fed by information that we give it. So you posting your pictures and your selfies, and I don't blame you for posting selfies. You ever wake up one day and you just feel real sexy? You just feel hot. You're like, the world needs to see how I look. You ever feel that way sometimes? You wake up and like, the world needs to see this ass. You know what I mean? And you post a picture and you get, I don't know, 17 or 19 likes on it. Like, yeah, everybody's agreeing. I look good. You are teaching an algorithm how you look, what you look like. You post another picture in 3 days, 4 days, 4 months, 6 months. That progression of your natural aging is also making the algorithm a lot smarter. Analytical and critical thinking, recognizing manipulation and misinformation, connecting unrelated ideas. AI can generate. So basically the entire future, how many categories I got here in this article? 1, 2, communication skills is one. But most of the stuff that you're going to need to know to be successful in the technologically sophisticated future is all based on AI. But I don't know how that's going to happen because everybody is resisting these AI data centers. I'm just waiting for one to get like firebombed and vandalized. Those people are very against them. Number 3 is communication skills. Yeah, I definitely need to take a break so I can come back with a fresh segment on these communication skills, because this is something that we can and should be perfecting now. And it exists separately from sophisticated, technical, artificial intelligence information, basic communication skills. Customer service 101. If I go to a restaurant and the food is so-so or lackluster, but the customer service skills and how I'm treated is top-notch, I'll go back to that restaurant. A restaurant that has the best food I've ever eaten and horrible service, they'll never see me ever again. I can make up an excuse for the food being so-so. But if you make me feel good and you're decent and you're kind and you're respectful and you're attentive, that's what I'm actually paying for. That's why I don't mind tipping. You're not just tipping the price of the food. It's an overall experience. And if you're not getting an experience that is 20% in addition to what the food cost is, then either don't go out to eat or go to a different restaurant. But I also know the tipping culture has gotten out of control. How come y'all don't give me tips for doing a radio show? I should put a tip jar in the studio. It would be empty, but I should. I mean, everybody else is asking for tips. How come I can't ask for tips? Xavier, you need to put a tip jar in the producer's studio.
You know, it's possible, like we talked about before.
Everything is possible.
Just like when you go live on your Hughes Views, you could turn on your monetization and they can send you tips.
Oh, God, send me all the money. In fact, no, I don't even want y'all to do that. Send me one sugar mama. Just one to pay all my bills. Can I get a sugar mama? Just one. I don't need several, but if a couple of you want to, like, split the duties, I'm cool with that. I'll let y'all work that out. But let me just get a sugar mama. Okay? Thank you. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back.
You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Welcome back to the program. I don't know what you're supposed to do, Xavier. I'm just over here. I'm just a squirrel trying to get a nut.
Well, I'm in the same boat.
That's all it is. I just need to know where I can get a nut at, because I'm a squirrel, and that's what squirrels eat. I'm not going to put a bunch of, you know, squirrels store nuts in their cheeks. I'm not doing that.
Oh, I let them out.
The nuts?
Yep.
I mean, you can only store them for so long.
Exactly. You know, it's all about the release.
I'm not here next week, ladies and gentlemen. I'm taking vacation days. I'm probably going to miss it. Because I haven't been off. I don't know if I've ever been off a week. Well, I got other things to do, though, I guess.
You can tune into your YouTube. There'll be videos playing.
I can't watch myself for very long. I sometimes watch because when I'm in the moment and I'm talking, I sometimes forget it's a camera in here and my body language is weird. I move all around. I lean on the chair all weird. Sometimes I spin on the chair. Sometimes I put on a bonnet. I do weird stuff sometimes. It's hard to watch myself. It used to be hard to listen to myself. Because I know a lot of people hate the sounds of our voices. It's because we sound different when we listen to our voices objectively. Most people will say, oh, I don't like the sound of my voice. Because when you hear your voice, you're hearing the sound of your voice echoing through your own head, and that changes the sound dynamic. Somebody explained this to me, and it made total sense. I was like, oh, it's not that I hate the sound of my voice. I just don't sound like I sound on a recording. Because then the sound of my voice just comes directly in my ear holes. Now when I speak, because my mouth is close to my ears, the sound of my voice, it echoes through my peanut brain. And it just bounces around in my head and that changes how I hear my own voice. But here's the thing. I got kind of a sexy voice. It's sexy a little bit. Got some sex appeal to it. A little bit. Will you guys get mad at me if I'm honest about Michelle Obama? Of all the things that I discuss, and there's a lot of things that I discuss, whenever I remark on what Michelle Obama has said publicly about a man that I hold in very high esteem, because I don't want anybody tarnishing the legacy of Barack Obama, because there's a whole subset of people in this country, like half of the country, and a whole political party that also despise him, but they don't despise him because he was bad. They despise him because he was good. I think it is fair to be honest about Barack Obama's failures because we should learn from them and not duplicate his policy failures that he committed. And no president is going to be perfect. But I think by and large what he meant, especially if you were coming of age during his presidency, there are some young people that like their first understanding of the president of the United States, maybe, I don't know, third grade or fourth grade or whatever, saw a black president for 8 years, meaning to them, it's no big deal. It's just normal. And to them, it also probably, once you learn history and you learn the civil rights struggles, which we have to make sure is taught universally in American schools, because if we're going to teach about the Holocaust, you better teach about my history. You better teach. I'm just saying, you're going to pass a law to teach about that, which fine with me, but don't exclude us. I'm crumpling up my damn papers. People will see the natural progression of how black people were property. And then freedom came and it was long fought. And then someone who would have been a slave was elected fairly to the presidency, because there is one thing we can say about Barack Obama's election and reelection. Wasn't no accusation of voter fraud there. Even the most racist among us said, dude won fair and square. And I found it interesting that when an old white guy wins the election, because a bunch of people in this country didn't like the one old white guy that won, they wanted the other old white guy to win, then all of a sudden we say it's election fraud. Not that anybody committed any election fraud, because I don't know anybody that does, because that's about the dumbest damn felony you can possibly get. If we were going to cheat, we would have cheated to get Obama elected, and we didn't. So why would we cheat to get Joe Biden elected? That's not a candidate you cheat to get elected. Joe Biden was a consolation prize. That's not worth going to prison for and cheating and manipulating the system. And hey, black people, let's all vote three times for Joe Biden because, you know, he's going to be the best we can possibly do. Now, I would have went to that meeting if they said, hey, everybody, here's a strategy session on how we're going to vote for Barack Obama three times. I wouldn't have voted for him three times, but I would have went to the meeting just to like see what they're talking about. You know what I mean? The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM will be right back.
You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.